From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted.
Monks of Death. The following story was told me by Mrs. Gray, a lady who came to one of my talks in London. Her grandmother, Mrs. Miles, was walking one evening with her friend, Miss Beale, along a country road in Hampshire. It was one of those evenings, far too few in this country, when there is a cloudless blue sky, dry roads, and the air is fragrant with a delicious scent of flowers and new-mown hay. "I never remember such a truly heavenly evening," Miss Beale exclaimed. "I could breathe in this air forever." And throwing back her head and opening her mouth, she drew in deep gulps. "And how silent it is," Mrs. Miles remarked. "How plainly we can hear the wind in the telegraph poles and trees. Listen." They stood still and listened to the plaintive moaning and sighing of the wind as it rustled through the trees and bushes. Suddenly they saw rising, so it seemed, from a pond on one side of the road, a couple of hundred yards ahead of them, a figure habited like a monk. He was a tall man and advanced towards them with long strides. As he drew nearer, they saw his face, and there were struck simultaneously with the old-worldness of it. It seemed to be a throwback into long centuries past, and was such a face as they had seen in paintings depicting monks and friars of the Middle Ages. He came hurriedly on, and passing them by, without as much as casting a glance in their direction, was continuing his course onward when, quite suddenly, they lost sight of him. One instant he was moving along the center of the broad white road, and the next instant he had vanished. They discussed the incident all their way home, and mentioned it to their landlady, who was a very old inhabitant of the locality. "I often heard tell of the monks when I was a girl," she said. "My father always said he saw one night when he was going to see my mother. It was in his courting days, but I never set eyes on one myself. It is said they never appear to anyone save as a kind of warning. Maybe you will hear news in the morning." They did, for Miss Beale received a telegram about noon saying that a very near and dear relative of hers was dead. She had died just about the hour Miss Beale and Mrs. Miller had seen the phantom monk. Another story relating to a ghostly monk seen in the same locality was told me by a man in whose house I was lodging when I was on tour. It was after the show was over, and I was chatting with him and a fellow actor before I went to bed. "I had been marketing with my father," the man said, "and we were late in starting for home. It was a rather long walk, but I was very young and strong and did not mind the distance. It was New Year's Eve and mild for the season. The sky was cloudy, and there was a slight ground mist. My father was not very talkative. I think all the tongue-wagging he had done during the day had tired him, and he marched silently along the lonely, deserted road. He had been in the army when he was young, and there were times, I fancy, when he imagined that he was still a soldier. I found it difficult to keep up with him, and from time to time lagged a little distance in his rear. I amused myself by throwing stones at various objects, as boys so often do. We had passed a derelict mill, and I was throwing stones into the mill pond when I caught sight of a tall figure moving along parallel with us. It was on the other side of the low wall which skirted the road, and it was advancing in the same direction as ourselves. At first I thought it was a woman, but on looking at it more closely, I came to the conclusion it was a man. Not only on account of its great height, I reckon it must be at least 6 feet tall, but also because of its build and its exceedingly long strides. There being, as I have stated, a mist, I could not see with any great distinctness what it was wearing. It seemed to be enveloped in some kind of long, flowing garment which I took to be a fancy dress of sorts, and I concluded it was a gentleman returning home from a New Year's ball. Ceasing to throw stones, my interest became wholly absorbed in watching the figure and in speculating who it could be. We continued walking along in this fashion for some considerable time, always keeping pretty well abreast of each other, until we came within a short distance of a spot where the wall terminated and there was a bridge over a stream. Well, when we were close to the spot, the moon suddenly began to emerge from behind a bank of clouds and to show itself for the first time that evening. What riveted my attention was the figure. I could see it as clearly now as I could see my father, and I was not a little surprised to note that the garments which had puzzled me so sorely were those of a monk. I could not see his face, because for one thing he never looked round at us, and for another thing it was partly concealed by a hood. When, however, he came to the bridge, he halted, and on my glancing back to see what he was doing, he had vanished. The roads and fields were bathed in moonbeams, and every object in them was as plainly revealed as if it had been broad daylight. But there was no monk, nor vestige of one. Much mystified, I ran after my father, and catching him up said, "Father, did you see that man dressed up as a monk? What has become of him?" I was about to say something else, but paused and stared wonderingly at my father. His face in the moonlight looked like a sheet, it was so white. But that was not all. There was an expression of terror in his eyes. His mouth twitched and his legs shook. Here my informant stopped for a moment whilst he refilled his pipe. "I can tell you, sir," he went on again, "I was scared. Nothing could have frightened me more than seeing my father, whom I had always regarded as a man of iron nerves, frightened." "What is it, Dad?" I asked in a very faltering voice. "Charlie," he replied, and his voice shook. "Charlie, maybe you've heard someone speak of ghosts. Well, what you saw just now, that monk was a ghost. Did you see its face?" "No," I replied. "Thank God for that, then," he responded. "Maybe it won't be so bad after all. Now, not another word about it till we get home." He did not refer to the subject again till we were all seated at breakfast, when he suddenly remarked, "I told you, Charlie, my boy, that what we both saw last night was a ghost. It was. I saw it once before, about 20 years ago. But neither then nor last night did I see its face, for which I am thankful. They say, that is, the old folk around here say, it is the ghost of some monk who was once bricked up alive in a monastery, and that periodically it is seen wandering about the countryside. So long as you don't see its face, which according to reports is terrible, it don't much matter. But should it look at you, then without doubt you will die very shortly." Bill Wiggin, 2 days before he died, told me he had just seen it on the high road, and that it had looked at him. And it also showed its face to Ben Smith, who died very soon afterwards. "I reckon you and I, lad, will live a good while yet, but we've had an escape." New Forest Hauntings. A strange story of the New Forest was told me by Mr. Robert Martin, a reader of my books. In his youth, Mr. Martin, who was now elderly, lived in the neighborhood of the New Forest. When his grandparents were young and the forest was considerably larger than it is today, there were people living in its vicinity who firmly believed that it was haunted, that on stormy nights when the lightning flashed and the rain and the wind lashed the great trees, witches came there on their broomsticks and danced the carol in the moonlit glades. Mr. Martin said the belief that the forest harbored ghosts was prevalent in his boyhood, and from what he had been told was still extant. He related to me an experience of his father in the forest. At the time it happened, his father was a young man. He went for a walk one afternoon in the neighborhood of Mark Ash Wood, about which he had heard strange tales of ghostly happenings. He was walking along a narrow path when a queer creature emerged from a pool on one side of the road and ran ahead of him. It was white, with long ears, was rather like a hare, and was yet not a hare. He had never seen any animal quite like it. He had a funny feeling that it was not really an animal, but of a species peculiar to itself. It fascinated and attracted him in a very extraordinary manner. He followed it to a small clearing, in the center of which was a great beech tree. The thing ran to the tree and vanished. His father examined the tree, but could find no hollow in it. He stayed close to the tree, hoping he would see the queer thing again. With the advent of twilight, the silence and loneliness of the spot affected him to such a degree that he hurried out of the forest and hastened home. He was so anxious to see the queer thing again that he went to the forest the following evening. He was walking along the narrow path to the tree in the glade when a woman emerged from close beside the pool and tripped lightly ahead of him. She wore a dark cloak over a light dress and very high-heeled shoes with large buckles that sparkled in the moonlight. His father followed her. She went to the tree in the clearing, and on reaching it, turned and smiled. She was young and very lovely. His father was enraptured. She laughed, kissed her hand, and stepped, as it seemed to him, straight into the tree and vanished. He lingered around the tree for some minutes and then went home. At this time, Martin explained, on the outskirts and round the vast heaths were a number of huts, whose inmates were for the most part nominally woodsmen and charcoal burners. They were generally an indolent mob, poor and wretched, who instead of trying to do honest work, made a precarious livelihood by deer-stealing, snaring hares and rabbits, and purloining timber. Martin's father sought these people who were thoroughly acquainted with the New Forest, and told them about the lovely woman and strange thing he had seen near Mark Ash Wood. That neighborhood, they said, is well known to be haunted by the ghost of Mary Dore, the famous Beaulieu witch. She possessed the power to assume any form she liked, and used to earn her living by stealing and telling fortunes. The figure that you saw emerge from the pool was her ghost, and that queer creature was either her or one of her familiar spirits. The ghost of Mary Dore infatuated Martin's father to such a degree that he visited the pool and tree night after night in the hope of seeing her, but he never saw her or the queer thing ever again. I asked Martin if he had ever seen a ghost in the New Forest, and he told me that he had on one occasion. It was when he was in his teens. He was walking one evening in the part of the forest in which his father had seen the ghost of Mary Dore, and was threading his way along the narrow path there when he saw a tall hooded figure in black approaching him. The light from the moon, which was full, threw it into strong relief, and there was something so eerie in its appearance and the way in which it was striding towards him that Martin was scared. As it drew nearer, it uncovered its head, and he was horrified to see the face of a skeleton. An unearthly light glowed in its cavernous eye sockets, and its hideous fleshless mouth grinned, revealing disgusting long decayed teeth. As it strode noiselessly past Martin, he smelt the cold, horrid air of the charnel house fan his face. He turned and saw it vanish in the pool from which his father had seen the two phantoms emerge. When he told his father what he had seen, his father said it was probably one of the evil spirits that haunted the forest in the days of his grandparents. He felt sure it was not the witch. The Phantom Pond. The following story of a Shropshire haunting was told me by Mrs. Dale, a friend of my mother. When a girl in the 60s of the last century, she was invited to stay a few days with her friends, the Dentons, who lived in a country house in Shropshire. When she arrived there, she found only Mrs. Denton at home. The two girls, Enid and Maud, had been summoned to Shrewsbury to the deathbed of one of their aunts. After luncheon, as the weather was fine and warm, Mrs. Dale took a book from one of the bookcases and went into the large garden to read, and at the same time to enjoy the fragrant country air that was such a pleasant contrast to the stuffy atmosphere of the overcrowded city in which she lived. Strolling along a narrow path, bordered on either side by flowers and bushes, she came to a summer house covered with clematis and honeysuckle. The interior of it was not as charming as the exterior. It was very dirty and cobwebby, and badly wanted cleaning. It was evidently not a favorite resort of the Dentons. Mrs. Dale took a chair from a pile of flower pots and garden tools, dusted it as well as she could with a rag, and carried it to a tree, the wide-spreading branches of which afforded it shade from the sun. For a time she read, and then, tired after a long journey and rendered drowsy by the heat, she dozed. She awoke with a start to hear footsteps and see coming along the narrow path a tall, slender girl in an old-fashioned dark dress, accompanied by a little, pale, fair-haired boy. The girl had dark hair and eyes, was prepossessing, and from her appearance might have been a servant or dressmaker. She crossed the lawn, passed close to Mrs. Dale, and approached the pond, which Mrs. Dale noticed for the first time, although it was only a short distance from her. When the girl got to the pond, she clasped the boy in her arms and jumped with him into the pond and sank out of sight. For some moments, Mrs. Dale remained in the chair, too shocked to move. Pulling herself together, she sprang up and ran to the pond, or rather to the place where she had seen a pond, for to her amazement, there was no longer a pond there. Not a trace of one, but only a flower bed. She returned to her seat with the intention of reading. It was of no use. She could not concentrate on the book. She kept conjuring up a vision of the prepossessing girl in the quaint, old-world dress, and the little fair-haired boy. When the Denton girls came home, she told them her strange experience in the garden. They were very interested, and said that when their mother bought the house, she was told that it was alleged to be haunted, but that did not trouble her, as neither she nor they believed in ghosts. Since they had been there, however, they had from time to time experienced an uncanny sensation when they were near the flower bed that she mentioned. They had spoken about it to the blacks, the former occupants of the house, who told them that on several occasions they had seen the apparition of a girl in an old-fashioned dress and a little boy in various parts of the grounds, and that when they first came to the house they had heard a servant girl had drowned herself and her son in the pond in the garden many years ago, and that their ghosts were rumored to haunt the place. In the hope of terminating the haunting, the blacks had had the pond drained. Ghostly horrors of the Dartmoor rivers. Few moors in Great Britain are as haunted as Dartmoor is reputed to be. There is the ghost of a Lady Howard, who on account of her alleged sins was doomed to haunt the road from Tavistock to Okehampton in the form of a huge black hound. Then there are the Yeth or Yell hounds that tear over the wild moorland, followed by a tall, dark spectral figure on horseback with a hunting pole in his hand and a horn slung round his neck. He is known as the Master, and also the Devil. An apparition known locally as Bingy is said to haunt Granmere Pool, the source of the Tavy on Dartmoor. Bingy is supposed to be the ghost of a man named Benjamin Gere, who for his bad deeds was doomed to haunt the pool. After the drowning of Sir John Fitz in the River Tavy, the pool in which his body was found was rumored to be haunted by his ghost. He was supposed to have committed suicide after killing Gamaliel Slanning in a duel. Pixies haunt various parts of Dartmoor, and phantom houses have been stated to appear on the moor from time to time. When I was a boy, I spent one summer holiday in Shagford, and was fishing one morning on Dartmoor, when a keeper asked me if I had a license. I answered in the negative and told him that I did not know I had to have one. He was quite nice and said I might stay there that day if I promised to get a license before I fished there again. I procured a license without delay, and the next time I met him on the moor, I showed it to him. We became great friends, and he told me many stories of weird happenings on the moor. On one occasion, he was talking to a man who was fishing in the dark, when the man pointed to a spot on the opposite bank of the river, a little distance from where they were standing, and said, "There is something deuced queer about that fellow. He gives me the shivers. He looks terribly ill, and is as pale as a ghost." The keeper looked in the direction the speaker indicated, but did not see anyone. Knowing the strange things that happened on the moor, he asked the speaker to describe the person, and the description the speaker gave of the queer individual tallied exactly with that of a man whose dead body had been found in the river a few months previously. The dart was much swollen at the time, and the man was thought to have lost his way in one of the dense mists that frequently occur on the moor, and to have fallen into the river and been drowned. The fisherman had barely finished describing the man he saw when he exclaimed, "Why, the fellow has disappeared. He must have tumbled into the river, for I can't see him anywhere." He peered into the water, which was not more than 2 or 3 feet deep, for a wonder, no rain had fallen for several days, but there was no sign of the queer individual. He gave up searching at last, and came to the conclusion that the man, who looked like a ghost, really had been a ghost. On another occasion, the keeper was walking with a friend by the dart, when he suddenly felt very cold, although the weather was extremely warm. At the same time, his friend clutched the arm and said, "Something dreadful is going to happen to me. My dead father is standing in the river looking at me." The keeper saw no one in the river. His friend met with a fatal accident within the next few days. I asked the keeper if he had ever seen a ghost on Dartmoor, and he told me that he had seen what he believed to have been one. He said he was crossing the moor one afternoon when a very tall, nude figure bounded by him into the dart, which was shallow at the time, and vanished. It was very thin, with long arms and legs and a round head. It went too fast for him to see its face. He got the impression that it was very strange. It was some days before the keeper recovered from the shock it gave him. At Two Bridges, where I had tea one day, I was told a queer story about Wiseman, or Wiseman's Wood, which is on the acclivity of a steep hill and forms one side of a valley through which the western branch of the Dart flows. It is supposed to have been one of the many sacred groves used by Druids in which to celebrate their mystic rites. My informant told me that two ladies from London, who were staying in the neighborhood of Two Bridges, told them that they were in Wiseman Wood one afternoon, threading their way between the blocks of granite that lay scattered about, when a procession of tall shadowy figures in white robes passed slowly by them, carrying in their midst, on a kind of bier, the corpse of a man or woman. The faces of all the figures resembled the long dead. The procession descended to the dart, which was full and in spate owing to recent heavy rain, and knelt down close beside the river. They were still kneeling and apparently praying when they gradually faded away and disappeared. The same ladies had a tale to tell about Kidd's Hole, or pool, near Lidford. They were standing in some spot above the hole, gazing down at the waterfall of the Lid one day, when they saw the shadowy figure of a woman in a shawl standing close beside the basin at the foot of the fall. She was holding what looked like a basket, and did not appear to mind being sprayed with water. Suddenly she toppled forward and fell into the pool. Much alarmed, the ladies were hastening to get assistance, fearing the poor woman would be drowned, when they met an elderly man. They told him about the woman, and he said, "There is no need to fear about her being drowned. People can't be drowned twice. What you saw was the ghost of an old woman called Kitty, who haunts the waterfall. The hole at the foot of it is named after her. Kitty was returning home from the market one dark stormy night, many years ago, when she fell into the hole and was drowned."